Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Happy Thanksgiving. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Like many parents, I have a child on the autism spectrum. Each day brings new challenges, and knowing where to get help is key. Today, we are joined by Dr. Paul Giordano, who's going to talk about the DAN biomedical approach to treating autism. Dr. Giordano is a naturopathic physician with extensive natural medicine training, specializing in difficult cases. Dr. Giordano is uniquely trained, credentialed, and qualified to provide patients with a comprehensive, multifactorial, and customized cutting-edge array of natural and functional medicine differential diagnoses, services, treatments, and care. Dr. Giordano assesses the whole patient as a person in particular state of wellness or dis-ease and not just their disease process or bone out of place or their laboratory values. In addition to being a DAN doctor working with patients in the spectrum in his Foxborough and Methuen offices and being listed in Spectrum magazine, the official directory of DAN, Defeat Autism Now, a part of the Autism Research Institute, Dr. Giordano works successfully with fibromyalgia patients, pain clinic patients, and speaks before the Crohn's and colitis support group at local hospitals, along with speaking before groups, giving lectures and seminars. Dr. Giordano, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Well, thank you for having me, Lisa.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that you're here this morning. It's such an important issue. Now, if you can tell us, who is Dr. Bernie Rimland, and what is his relation to the DAN protocol?
yes, Dr. Rimland is really the one who started a lot of the look at the biomedical approach. Refused to say that it was just a psychological or a psychiatric problem. He's the one who really broke a lot of the ground as far as understanding that our body chemistry is not just changed through drugs, but it's changed through nutrition.
Oh, okay. Now, so what I read, and you can tell me this is correct, is that Dr. Rimland, he brought together a lot of people into this way of thinking, and he called a lot of different professionals in the health field, and they had DAN conferences. Can you tell us about these?
Yes. I mean, so there's just many different ways to view it instead of just a singular approach. There are really five main diets that we look at as far as naturopathic and nutritional. We consider a gluten-free, casein-free, mm-hmm. which is really the gold standard. The specific carbohydrate diet, the fine gold diet, the body ecology diet, the low oxalate or phenolic diet, and Weston A. Price's approach to diet as well is considered.
Okay, now for a child with, if you still have a child on the spectrum, it seems like the GFCG is at the gluten-free, casein-free diet seems to be the most common. Is that what you work with?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It's gluten, of course, is the protein in wheat, rye, wheat, oat, and barley. Casein is the protein in dairy. I find dairy to be far and away the most allergic food there is in everyone I see. It's estimated that following a gluten-free, casein-free diet has had about a 65% improvement with the patients who follow it, whereas the specific carbohydrate diet has a similar rating.
Now, what is a specific carbohydrate diet? I'm not familiar with that.
Basically, what you're looking at is the removal of all complex sugars and starches. Some people will leave in some fruit sugar, sometimes honey.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the notion that if there's a problem with food, it really is sugar. Sugar depresses the immune system.
Okay.
70 to 80% of the immunity is really in the gut, and this is a large part of what we're looking at with, especially the spectrum. Foods, baked goods, candy, of course. Jelly and fruit snacks, the granola bars. People think they're eating healthy when they're having granola bars, when it really does break down to a lot of sugar. Fruit punch-style drinks, ice cream, ketchup, soda. You're going to find it, chocolate milk. There's so many things, cereal, that people are having every morning thinking that they're doing the right thing, when in fact all grains are pro-inflammatory because they have lectins in them. So we start looking at removing grain, pasta, bread from this kind of an approach, or at least reducing it as much as we can.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's interesting. Now, I didn't realize that all grains had an inflammatory effect. Is that true for even brown rice or millet or amaranth, the ones that are gluten-free?
Well, the gluten, so it's a matter of prioritization. Mm-hmm. My job is not to remove all the foods I can from the person. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
We want to make sure people are eating and enjoying their life as much as possible. But we end up eating the foods that we're really most allergic to. We're craving them to a certain extent. It's feeding a yeast overgrowth, especially with the specific carbohydrate diet, is what we're trying to do, is stop the yeast going into overgrowth.
I see. So it's really good to take a probiotic, which we'll get into as well. Now, how does this relate to autism? Is it that the children who have autism or on the spectrum tend to develop yeast overgrowth and have a more sensitive gut? It's more permeable, where things can sort of get in and out of it more easily, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, we're trying to reduce gut inflammation,
okay,
and kind of starving the bad gut bugs out, avoiding foods that are high in carbohydrates. Children in the spectrum frequently lack these enzymes, and their digestive systems are attacked by these kind of bacteria, even Clostridia, H. pylori bacteria. There's a number of different things. Just as medicine always preaches, we have opportunistic organisms looking for the opportunity. These children, these people are more susceptible to all of this. It's a fuel issue. So they're running low on fuel. When the government only requires that three minerals be put back in the ground since 1936, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and 77 minerals have been identified as essential for life. It's not in the food, a lot of the nutrients we need.
I see. So what type, so it sounds like a more protein-based diet then. If you're taking out the grains, is it vegetables and protein? Are you in favor of like lots of chicken and fish or eggs?
Well, not really lots of anything, Lisa.
Okay.
It's protein and vegetables. If I was to break it down, and the fruit too, kind of sparingly more, but the grain pasta bread is the offending way to go. We're not saying high protein at all.
Okay.
We're really saying protein adequate, carbohydrate adequate, and fat adequate. There are essential fats, there are essential amino acids, which are proteins, but there's really no essential carbohydrates.
I see. Now, if we were going to do some testing for this, I know that you can have... they can test the stool. Can you test your blood for some of this? I mean, if you wanted to find out if there was a yeast overgrowth in the gut, which test would you use?
Yeah, we look at, autoimmune food sensitivity workups are frequently a way to go. Excuse me for a moment.
Oh, sure.
And there are tests to verify the level of a systemic amount of yeast overgrowth in the blood. IgG testing, immunoglobulin G, which is delayed hypersensitivity testing.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at secretory IgA. So basically, if we look at the immune system as lines of defense, IgE, immuno, part of the immune system, globulin, protein-based, letter E, rhymes with allergy.
Oh.
That's the first line of defense. Like troops, if you look at emergency, ambulance, police, first responders. That's what, in general, you'll find your medical people testing for.
Mm-hmm.
After IgE has become exhausted, IgM comes into play. It's not something that medical is looking at as much. They're looking more, because it's delayed hypersensitivity, it's not necessarily immediate that they're going to see in front of their eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's backups. After IgM, there's IgA. After IgA, there's IgG, immunoglobulin G. So by the time it got to G, it had to go through the other immunoglobulins in order to support and defend and help the body. And the person is pretty run down. This is a chronic situation at this point.
Okay. You know, it's interesting because I'm actually sensitive to... if I eat wheat, I'm okay, and then the next day I have what I call a food hangover, where I'm really tired. But when I get an allergy test, like a regular pinprick, you know, blood test,
that's
I come out as not.
Yeah, that's kind of old science. That's IgE testing.
Yeah, it doesn't really, I don't think it really works very well.
Frankly, when you look at the IgG testing, immunoglobulin G, mm-hmm. the most delayed, I see the IgEs clear out.
Okay.
And people will tell me, well, it's only environmental. It's why would I go to foods? Foods are the constant in our lives, and it's what leaves us susceptible to everything else. I mean, you could move to Arizona and say, okay, I feel better now, but you've still brought your own susceptibility there. When we change who you are, then you're not as susceptible to your environment as well.
All right, so then if you have a child on the autism spectrum, would you recommend first the gluten-free, casein-free diet?
Yes.
Okay. And...
Yes. The gluten, in case your audience is not that aware, is very pro-inflammatory. It's the sweaty look on semolina pasta. It's the moist taste in the bagel. It's the high gluten dough in the pizza. It gives that satisfaction. The food scientists know that it gives a satisfaction going through the mouth and over the tongue. But it has a pro-inflammatory response, increases inflammation, it erodes, especially the villi and microvilli. You can kind of look at it kind of like a shag rug, finger-like projections in the small intestine, where it's the equivalent in a healthy person of about 2 tennis courts. The surface area is about 2 tennis courts. So that's where we absorb almost everything. Gluten attacks that specifically. So our ability, even if we're putting the nutrients in, we're not absorbing them.
I see. And so for a child on the spectrum, is that going to have behavioral benefits from their gut not being, you know, attacked by this gluten?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
And what kind of changes have you seen?
Well, I guess that's why we call it the spectrum, too, to a large extent.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Because it really does go across the whole spectrum. When there is increased anger or aggressiveness, I always consider that a liver, a gallbladder. Just like people have, it's not a current expression, but years ago they used to say, you have a lot of bile to do that. Basically,
that.
What we're talking about is the heart has to be faster to move the toxins in the blood through the kidneys and liver in order to filter it out.
Oh, okay.
So I'll even see it in the ADD and ADHD. There's COCA. There's the COCA pulse test. I think it was done back in the 50s or 60s, where they realized that if you ingested something that you were sensitive to, the heart would start beating faster and faster. So if someone is breaking out into a sweat after they eat, today's Thanksgiving, and we're all generally eat too much and some of the wrong food.
That's true.
When the heart is beating faster, it's doing that in order to accommodate and remedy a situation. It sees it as not quite a crisis, but something that needs to be handled. So it's trying to push the blood through the liver and kidneys faster to filter it out.
Oh.
That's the hyperactivity.
I see. So then you remove the gluten, and then that's going to cause the heart not to have to work so hard to push out the toxins.
Well, I don't want to be so simplistic, as everyone knows. Because
yeah, I know.
Lots of couples and families who've tried the gluten-free, casein-free, and they say, oh, I haven't seen the results.
Yeah, I was going to...
This is not... medicine approaches a lot of what they do with a monotherapy approach.
Mm-hmm.
Take this for that. One drug, one target. In holistic care, we're well aware that the way the body copes, it shares its problems, just like the children share with their parents and parents share with their community and so on. Just like heart pain going down the left arm. If we weren't able to do that, we would have heart attacks a lot sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So the body is sharing organ referral patterns, is what I call them. There's these fancy names. Prior to being an embryo, basically, without going off track too much, we were 3 original tissues, mesoderm, endoderm, and ectoderm, undifferentiated, and then we turned into skin, hair, blood, guts, muscle, and so on. So what folded away, developed, became the left arm, shared some mesodermal tissue with the heart. So all the organs are sharing problems, just like pain down the legs. That's intestinal. If anybody's had a colonoscopy, and I'm sure some of your audience has, after a colonoscopy, people can feel burning pain down their legs.
Oh.
And you're not feeling it in your intestine, but you're feeling it in your legs.
Oh, interesting. Oh. Now, if they asked their Western doctor about that, what would they say? Would they say the same thing, or would they have some other explanation? I'm just curious, in your opinion.
Well, I mean, there are some basic things that I think that in function that medical people will look at. As a naturopath, by the way, I'm licensed in Washington State. I have prescription privileges there. There's no license yet in Massachusetts. It really is still kind of backwards, and they're trying to hold back all of this progressiveness that's going on. It really is a lot of good science.
Oh, definitely.
On with this.
Oh, yeah, there is. Yeah, you know, that's too bad. I mean, I just had Suzanne Summers on to talk about her new book, Knockout.
Right.
And she talked about all these little doctors that are doing amazing work, but yet they're just, they're constantly trying to shut them up. You know, they're just not giving them the time that they really need.
It's, it, you know, there's no intellectual curiosity.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, I and not, again, not to get off topic,
oh, that's okay.
But I'm just thinking of a patient I just saw a couple of days ago, a 17-year-old. His blood sugar was over 400 when I saw him. He was on two medications that were barely working. And in a matter of about 4 weeks, the first week we normalized his blood with his with the nutrients we gave him. But his pancreas is pumping more insulin again. And when she told me, the mom told me that... they told the doctor about it, and shame on him. He just kind of shrugged. Whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. You know, I probably should have got a call. That's what we do as colleagues.
Yes.
They do that in the Pacific Northwest and other progressive areas, but here I just don't get it. It's really 30 years behind the time.
Yeah, I would have thought that it's more progressive here. Now, I'm from California. I've been here about 10 years, and I assume that it would be more progressive, so I'm surprised. I mean, I was from Santa Cruz, so...
But, I mean, this doctor's a Joslin diabetes doctor as well. You,
mm-hmm.
you would have thought, you know, at least someone to refer to. What's his name? Something.
Yeah, that's true.
Kind of silly.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do. I think there definitely needs to be more communication between the Western and the holistic practitioners. So getting back to talk about the DAN protocol, so that involves, obviously, the food changes. And then are there supplements as well that are part of that?
Yeah, the supplementation is critical. And again, as I mentioned before, when people tell me they've tried removing gluten and casein and without results, as I said, also, there's only three minerals in the ground, and it's just not in our food. It really accelerates the process by using supplementation. Bioavailable ones, the ones I carry, some of them, for example, are powders that really taste good and designed especially for the spectrum, totally absorbed within 3 to 4 minutes.
Oh,
I have other products that have bile salts in them, things you're just not going to find over the counter, in order to balance out the... It's a functional medicine approach is what I look at. It's not just giving it a name and saying this is autism. I'm looking at it as a functional problem, and how do we get... there's a brain fog that happens when you're excreting well enough.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some very interesting studies, for example, with autism compared to intelligent children, both of them eating lots of fish, mercury content in the fish. So they're finding in the hair analysis of the intelligent children lots of mercury in the hair. So their phase 2, Roman numeral 2, liver detoxification pathway is working very well, and they're getting the mercury out.
Oh.
Autistic children, the hair analysis showed there's a little to no mercury content. So what it is, it's getting locked into the system.
Oh, I see.
So they're just like any chemical pathway, part of it, we need enough sulfur in our diet in order to complete that pathway. So these are some of the things that I do and give nutrients. And people say, well, they're going to the bathroom. Well, it's like, again, it's not the same. It's not waiting for your oil light to come on to change the oil. And we see a symptom, and it's time to do something about it. We don't stack trucks on a bridge and wait to see how many we can put on it. There's more specific ways to address and assess that.
I see. Now, what are some of these supplements? I mean, I know there's probiotics. Are there different vitamin mixtures, or what is that like?
Yeah, I mean, even the probiotics, the ones over the counter generally don't make it past the stomach.
Oh.
Viability is just not there. I'm not against having over-the-counter products. I'm glad they're there. But the ones I use, I've investigated. It takes a long time for things to get on my shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that they're going to be effective. They're not using the binders, the excipients. In other words, there's a glaze, there's a talcum powder, there's carnauba wax in some of these products over-the-counter in order to hold them together.
Oh, I see.
Excuse me. How many times I've heard people saying they get sick when they take their supplements. And, well, they shouldn't be getting sick, number one, from taking their supplements, because we need them. It's either the junk that's in the supplements, it's how they're stored, the quality, and or they're starting to detox.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, when people who will eat their greens and they go, I don't like that. So when they say that, what it is we're sensing, we're tasting the greens on your tongue, the trigeminal nerve, it's going up into the brain, down into the organs, and it starts the process right away of detox. So it's really important, actually, as much as possible, and not everybody wants to do that, but to taste our products. So in other words, our salads, when we drown them in hydrogenated fats or globs of this or globs of that, we're not tasting the bitterness in the greens, and we're not starting the cholagogic process right away. So that's the pumping action, moving stuff out, getting the trash out.
Oh, okay. Oh, I like that. Say that word again.
Cholagogic. Cholagog is something that causes a pumping action in and detoxing. And, mm-hmm. We're always detoxing. People say, is it time for me to do a detox? Well, you should be doing it all the time, just like you want to put your trash out all the time,
Or
it's going to build up pretty fast.
Yeah, that's true. And I want to let everyone know you're listening to WUML, Thinking Out Loud. It's Your Health, 91.5 FM in Lowell. I'm speaking with Dr. Paul Giordano, and we're talking about all kinds of interesting things here on Thanksgiving. And I want to get back again to the DAM protocol. So you've got the diet, the GFCG, which is a gluten-free, casein-free. You've got supplements. And is there anything else that you would recommend for children on the spectrum?
There's lots of things I do. I actually stimulate the ear points, not penetrating with a needle, but just stimulating them.
Okay.
The ears are the one place in the body that has all three tissues that I was referring to earlier, mesoderm, endoderm, and ectoderm, and I can treat everything from the ears. So if I'm seeing the stimming or the hyperactivity or aggression and so on, it just goes, again, through the whole spectrum. Three treatments with one 5-year-old from my Foxborough office, his aggressiveness had dropped completely. The mom called me from the dentist's office. He was sitting there like a gentleman. She was crying over the phone.
Oh,
you know, how he's virtually dropped the diagnosis at this point.
Oh, that's incredible.
So it's not just what do I take. I'm looking to see how I can encourage the body to use its own innate intelligence. So I do cranial manipulation. I do visceral manipulation. There's a number of different things we can do. I've treated as young as 5 days old as 94.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I've heard good things about the cranial manipulation, actually. That was something.
Again, everything is in relationship to everything else in the body. So the parietal bone near the temporal area, a drop parietal has a direct effect on sphincters in the intestine. Ileocecal valve syndrome is one of the things I look at with that.
What is that, ileocecal valve syndrome?
Yeah, without getting too technical,
sure.
It's just a sphincter is like what's in the anus,
mm-hmm.
or where the food tube separates from the stomach. And so it reacts to other valves, other sphincters in the intestine, which will then often shut down. Sometimes they can get locked open or go back and forth, and there's an irritability. Causes backwash. We'll not be getting our toxins out well enough. We'll refer to the back, which will then cause the muscles to contract, go into spasm, which then pinches on the nerves, which the nerves now go back into the organs again. So what you've got is a vicious circle, whereby worse makes worse.
Now, how common is that in kids?
It's quite common, actually. I look for it all the time.
Oh, wow. Now, how do you test for that?
When people have back pain, for example, oftentimes it's intestinal. That's just what I was trying to refer to.
And the
intestine is sharing its problems into the back.
Okay.
I've helped failed low back surgeries by helping the intestine.
Wow. God, this is so interesting. There's so many things that I don't know that I'm so happy to have you on to educate me and the audience about.
So fascinating. The more I find, it's a discovery process with everyone.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you have such a wonderful, you just have so much knowledge. Now, one question that I had about the GFCG, the gluten-free, casein-free diet, is I noticed that, a lot of wheat products tend to have, like if you get whole grain, whole wheat pasta, it's like 6 grams of fiber, or, raisin bran or something like that. They have a lot of fiber. And then if you wanted to go gluten-free and you wanted to go to the packaged foods, they're all white rice and, tapioca starch and potato starch. And so I'm just curious about your advice, as it seems like it might be better just to go past those, because I'm noticing that when you do the GFCG, where do you get the fiber? I'm guessing from vegetables?
Vegetables.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah. The thing is, again, is that these foods can cause these what we call brain opioid peptides, or morphine-like compounds in the brain, and there's an addictive quality. I'm also a board-certified addictionologist in compulsive disorders, the only natural board of its kind.
Oh.
And so we'll eat, to take a substance or do an activity in spite of its negative consequences is really an addiction. So. Yes. I mean, as you mentioned earlier, basmati rice has a low glycemic index, glucosine from blood. How fast is it dumping sugar into the bloodstream? White rice, of course, is going to just push it in really fast.
Oh, yeah. No.
And again, the hormones are in relationship to each other as well. Protein stimulates glucagon, which inhibits insulin. Carbohydrates pushes insulin up. So that's why we want to have protein at the same time we're having any kind of carbohydrate. Otherwise, you're going to have this surging of insulin, which is going to throw all the other hormones off.
Okay. Now, what do you do when your child is picky? And this happens a lot, obviously, and you've got to make these changes. Do you have any advice? Because it's really tough to take stuff away from kids when they're used to it and try to get them to make the changes.
Right. We'll try powders. I have greens that we can mix into smoothies. You can mix in fruit and other things, that we try to determine that are working or well enough.
Okay.
It's, again, are we calling it autism then, or it's our drug of choice?
I see.
And some of it, if I make enough noise, can I get my way and I'll get my drug?
I
know that that's one of the biggest things I deal with the parents, and some parents are not willing to walk that. But it's like joining a gym. They're emotionally stunted. When you join a gym, you feel sore. That's why they give you contracts so you can't leave. But you're sore, so you'll stick it out.
Yeah.
And then you're proud that you did it because you're starting to get the game now. You're starting to feel better.
Yeah.
The same thing here. When, I don't like the taste, so I only want something sweet all the time, which is causing all these negative consequences. So little by little, we get a little bit more in, a little bit more in. We reinforce it verbally all the time. What a good job you're doing. These are going to help you. You're going to be thinking more clearly. The problems, whatever their problem specifically is, the stimming and so on that may be going on, will be improved because of it.
I see. Now, how do you feel about beans and lentils? I'm a huge bean and lentil fan, and my daughter, who's on the spectrum, she eats some gluten, but she eats mostly gluten-free, but she eats a lot of whole foods. She loves berries, but she loves beans and lentils. What do you think about those?
I think in general they're fine for people, but again, huge is not what we want.
Okay.
Do a rotation diet as much as possible. They found early on that eating the same food or even the food family every single day, and we wrap bread around everything and
I know
things every single day. We have refrigerators and leftovers, and it causes a sensitization to the foods.
Okay.
It seems to go back to when we were hunters and gatherers. and a rotation diet. In other words, eating not the same food every single day, but or its family, really. Mm-hmm. We used to think every third day. Today, the current science, the current research is saying every fourth day.
Okay. Now, what about even with fruits and vegetables, you should change them up? Or is it okay to eat, you know, raspberries every day and,
well,
you know, lettuce
again,
or something?
How much can we deal with?
Yeah.
If there's not an issue, then we don't push it too much. If there is, then I get more and more specific as needed.
I see.
You know, without trying to, again, my goal is not to remove anything if possible, and I want to reintroduce as much as possible, but we're trying to give the body a rest, essentially, so that then we can see what the person can cope with after recovery has occurred to a large extent.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that, because that's something that I do with for myself. Like, I used to eat whole wheat pasta maybe every, like, once a week, and I felt fine. I didn't even have the food hangover. And then I would start to increase it, and then I'd start to feel sick. And now what I do is, like, if I don't eat it for 3 months, and then I eat it again, I feel fine. So now it's like once in a while, I have certain foods that I can eat once in a while. And it's sort of like it gives my body a break.
And that's the goal, exactly.
Okay. So it doesn't mean you have to take it out forever. Or maybe some people do. I mean, you know, perhaps if it is more of a...
I have a handful of people that will still react to certain things. And there's certain meridian points that we can try to get the body to adapt and not seeing it as a problem, too. So, you know, there's functional ways to try to get the body to know that.
Oh, okay. Wow, you do a lot of different things then in your offices. And you're located in Foxborough and, was it Methuen?
Methuen. My website is giordanowellness.com. That's G-I-O-R-D-A-N-O, wellness.com. The phone number in Methuen is 978-688-7100. And in Foxborough, it's 508-543-3373.
Yeah, well, I'm going to give you a call. I want to bring my daughter in, you know.
And offer free initial consultations.
What's that?
Oh, excuse me for interrupting.
Okay.
We offer free initial consultations for people to come in and just discuss, and I can show how I would work with the person.
Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, that's terrific. And the last question I have is, are you against taking medications, or do you think sometimes they can work, you know, complementary with the supplements and the other modalities that you use?
Lisa, my goal is to reduce and eliminate the need for the medication.
Okay.
That should be the goal of everyone, I would think. Medication should be more of a last resort as opposed to a primary way to work.
Okay.
To us in natural medicine, what we do is really primary care. And then the medications have become when things... my mother's mother died of pneumonia. There was no penicillin at the time.
Yeah.
So certainly medications have really saved lives. There's no question about it. But... it's hard on the liver. You know, I could give you lots of cases, Lipitor and some of the things that people have taken, and Crohn's and colitis and so on, and what the medications have done, and how they've made some of them symptom-free and others ravage them. So, and then trying to recover after that. So it's it runs the gamut. I'm not against medication, certainly not. I'll just leave you one interesting quote, though.
Sure.
I was looking at a quote from Jonas Salk with the polio vaccine. He had said that the highest incidence of getting polio was after he introduced the vaccine.
Oh.
So there were more people getting it actually after he introduced the vaccine than prior to.
Oh, interesting. Wow, there's so much to, you know, I definitely want to have you back on, because you just, you know, I'd love to talk about vaccinations and all the other interesting things that you do. I want to thank you so much again.
Vitamin D for the flu.
Oh, okay. Oh,
vitamin D for the flu.
Vitamin D for the flu. Okay. In supplement form or food form? What do you think?
You can't really get... sunshine D is not enough. And,
okay.
We don't want to be packing down a lot of dairy either.
Yeah.
The supplement form is really the best way to go.
All right. Well, terrific. Well, have a wonderful holiday.
Thank you. You too. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, I'm so glad you were on. Thank you so much. And if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. Stay tuned. Joining us in just a moment is Dr. Natasha Turner, who is a naturopath as well and the author of the national bestseller, The Hormone Diet. So keep listening. Hi, I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome back to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Do you feel tired, stressed, have a low sex drive, have excess fat around your middle, and just don't feel like yourself? The answer lies in your hormones, and joining us today to shed some light on this very important topic is Natasha Turner, ND, a leading naturopathic doctor who is an authority on hormonal and digestive concerns and author of the national bestseller, The Hormone Diet. Dr. Turner is also the founder of Clear Medicine, a Canadian wellness boutique that provides integrated health care. As a health consultant and educator, Dr. Turner lectures across Canada, appears frequently in the media, and has contributed to the creation of two commercial weight loss programs which have helped to transform many lives. Today we will be talking about her national bestseller, The Hormone Diet. Dr. Turner, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I'm so glad to have you here. I absolutely loved your book.
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, it is so informative, and I've been doing the exercises. I mean, it really, for people out there, get this book. It spells out everything you need to do to feel better. It's wonderful. And in the introduction to your wonderful book, The Hormone Diet, you write, quote, your story of hormonal havoc. Can you tell us about what you were experiencing and when this started?
Well, it actually, I mean, honestly, most people don't think about their hormones until something gets out of whack, and unfortunately, that was the case with me. In about 1993, I was exercising, I was watching what I was eating, I was doing everything perfectly, and yet I was continuing to gain more and more weight, and I had packed on about 30 pounds, regardless of all my hard work, and I was just like, what is happening? And I found out once I ended up in the emergency ward because I had severe confusion and lethargy that after a few days I found out that I had this deficiency of thyroid hormone. So I had underactive thyroid disease. And so I started replacing the thyroid hormone, and literally within a week I started to feel like myself again. I started to lose weight. My periods got restored. I started to, you know, my hair started to grow back. And I realized that, wow, these hormones are really incredibly important. They're controlling so many things in our body and our metabolism from one minute to the next. And so I started to really investigate this whole situation. And in my 12 years of practice as a naturopathic doctor, I just repeatedly started to see patients that were coming in, that were crying, they were saying there's something wrong, something's out of balance, you know, I'm just being told that I need to take antidepressants, and it's just not offering me the solution. And you're right, in your introduction, I literally went through and figured out all the things that we need to do on a day-to-day basis to optimize hormonal balance so that you can basically start to think about getting healthy. And when you get healthy and you get back in balance, that's when you actually lose weight and achieve optimal health. So many of us think that you get healthy through weight loss, and I really believe that that's not the solution.
Yeah, no, I mean, that makes so much sense. And this is a pretty basic question, but if you can just kind of explain, what are hormones, and, you know, in a simple way?
well, they're little tiny chemical substances that travel in your body, and they control every single aspect of your health. So they're basically chemical messengers. So whether or not you feel the need to have a rest or grab a coffee or a quickie or your sugar cravings or your immune system function, your menstrual cycle, how well you sleep at night, your sex drive, your body temperature, everything is controlled by your hormones. So the real secret is to figure out, well, if everything in your health from one minute to the next is controlled by your hormones, and then you have to think about, well, what's controlling my hormones? And everything we do, think, say, or feel impacts our hormones. And so the secret is to adapt a hormonally balanced lifestyle. So I guide people through a simple process that you can use over a period of about 6 weeks to bring all your hormones back in balance. But I think the big eye-opener, and I think the reason why the book has been so incredibly successful, is that most of us have no idea that our hormones are out of balance. And in the book, I put in a questionnaire, and in the questionnaire, there's 16 different groups of questions.
Yeah,
your answers
really
to the questions
good.
Help you determine if your hormones are in or out of balance. And the biggest thing has been, I've received emails from all over North America saying, I had no idea that all these symptoms that I was having, I thought they were normal or simply as part of aging. And they aren't. They're actually signs that your body's out of balance.
So it's not just then for, like, I was thinking, you know, when you're going through menopause or something and you're going through changes, but this can happen at any age.
That's right. You're exactly right. Most people, okay, when they hear the word hormone, they, mm-hmm, think of women and menopause.
Yeah.
But we all have hormones, and your hormones impact every stage of life. And that's the unique part about the hormone diet is actually when I sat down to write this book, if I looked at the bookshelf, there was not another book out there that was for both men and women,
mm-hmm,
that was not designated to a specific stage of your life. So this process you can use if you're in your 20s and you're stressed out and a university student. You can use it in your 30s if you're concerned with fertility for men or women. You can use it in your 40s if you think you're becoming perimenopausal, or in your 50s when you're menopausal or you're in andropause. You can use the same process in the book because you take the questionnaire, which helps you determine if your hormones are in or out of balance. You can tweak the prescription with supplements, bioidentical hormones, specific foods, lifestyle exercises, everything to help improve your hormonal balance depending on the stage that you are at this time.
I see. You know, it's funny. I was about to ask you about bioidentical hormones because I recently interviewed Suzanne Summers about her new book, Knockout.
Yes.
And she, which was great. She was wonderful. And she talked about bioidentical hormones. And I wanted to talk with her more and I, you know, about that. But that's why I was so happy when I found you. I thought, oh my gosh, this is the woman I could talk to about this.
Well,
what are bio?
Suzanne was just here and
oh,
actually,
really?
She recommended my clinic, the Clear Medicine, as one of the leading ones in Canada for bioidentical hormone treatment.
Oh, that's
great. And she's listed me in the reference of her book.
Oh,
so
okay.
I'm thrilled about that.
Yeah, that's terrific.
And,
yeah, that's a great book.
Yeah, it's fabulous. And she's done an incredible amount of, she's just been amazing for anti-aging medicine and really helping to get people, you know, help people gain awareness of all the options that you have. But bioidentical hormones are basically, they're hormones, they're prescription. So they are, you know, they're not something that you should take without getting proper testing,
okay,
and follow-up and without consulting with someone that really specializes in this field. But the benefit of the bioidentical hormones is that they're actually bioidentical, means that you're taking the hormones in the same form that are naturally present in your body. So there's less risk of side effects.
Okay.
You actually also dose the hormones in the same way that your body would naturally produce them.
I see.
So it offers wonderful benefits for women that have PMS or breast tenderness, irritability, mood swings, or problems with infertility, or people that are perimenopausal with night sweats and hot flashes, or changes in your skin, your hair. You can use these bioidentical hormones, and I prefer using them topically because you bypass the liver. So there's less chance of side effects.
And where can you get these? Through naturopathic physicians?
Naturopathic doctors,
mm-hmm,
medical doctors, anti-aging specialists. I'm one of the few naturopathic doctors that has training in bioidentical hormones, only because of my own problems. I dove into this field probably starting about 10 years ago. So naturopathic doctors, there are some that are very, very well versed, but then also medical doctors as well. So or you can also check with compounding pharmacies. And the most important thing to do before you dive into bioidentical hormones is to get a measurement of your hormones. And depending on your age and your sex, you'll do your tests at different times. So, for example, if you're a premenopausal woman, you'll want to test on certain days of your cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're postmenopausal or a man, you can do the hormone test any day. And then based on those results, you actually create the perfect hormonal prescription to suit your needs.
Oh, that's great.
And you can use saliva as a mode of measuring your hormones, or blood, or even urine.
Oh, that's really good. Now, I wanted to talk about something that affects everybody, and that is stress.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to talk about the connection between stress, cortisol, and ab fat. And if you could tell us what cortisol is and how it relates to those.
Well, we have two types of stress hormones. You have adrenaline, which is your immediate response to stress. And most of us are familiar with how that feels if you have like a near-miss accident on the highway. But cortisol is our long-term stress hormone. And so it's released when we're under chronic periods of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the most important thing for people to understand is your body recognizes all types of stress the same. It responds the same way every time by releasing cortisol. So When I say all types of stress, I mean physical stress, like over-exercising or working in a cold environment or working in a loud environment. People that work in open office environments, for instance, have higher levels of cortisol. Or it could also be emotional stress, like you're going through a divorce or in your financial stresses. So your body can't really differentiate between the two. It does respond the same way every time by releasing cortisol. And cortisol is a really detrimental hormone because most of us tend to have too much because we're all stressed.
Yeah.
And it causes a loss of muscle as you age because cortisol is selective for muscle tissue to help give your body energy to get through the stressful event. Well, if you're sitting at your desk and you have the stress of deadlines, you're not really burning off that stress energy that your body's giving. And unfortunately, all those extra calories that your body's just freed up that it thinks it needs to get away from the stress ends up getting stored as fat, particularly around your abdomen.
Oh, okay.
So that's how stress makes you fat. And we know that this is true by looking at women, for instance, that are otherwise thin, but when they have high levels of cortisol, they have increased body fat around the abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a lot of women in my office that are in their, you know, early, mid-40s, late-30s, and, you know, they say, I am so frustrated. I have this stubborn abdominal fat. No matter how much I watch my diet or exercise, I can't get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time, it's because you have to think about lowering your cortisol. And the type of exercise that you choose to do at that time, if you're a stressed person, is incredibly important. So if you're someone that tends to be under stress and you think, well, I'm going to start running every day to help burn off these calories and lose weight, well, if you're running longer than 30 to 40 minutes, you're actually going to raise your cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
So the hormonal prescription for exercise that I talk about in the book is really aimed at maximizing the hormones that burn fat, but also prevents the rise in cortisol. So all the workouts are super short.
Yeah, no, I think that's great because I actually, it's funny, I've always been in great shape. I've always been thin. And then I had my daughter who's 5 and she's on the autism spectrum and the stress has been tremendous. She's amazing, but it's very stressful. And I don't have a lot of fat there, but I definitely have some, and I never did before. And I definitely, you know, I went and saw a naturopath, and she did some tests, and she said, oh, yeah, you're almost in adrenal fatigue, which I wanted you to talk about. I know. And luckily, I did a lot of homeopathy, and I've, you know, handling my stress better. I'm doing better. But it's scary, you know, because then I thought, oh, my gosh, I have to exercise harder. So I'm so glad that you're saying this because I'm sure there's so many women out there who are getting heavier because of the stress and then they're running harder and then they're getting heavier still.
I know, and it's so true. And it's so hard to wrap your head around the fact that you actually need to exercise less. So I am so adamant about the type of exercise that I actually put a personal training studio in my clinic.
Oh my
gosh. And I have 2 personal trainers that are like they've been practicing for 15 years, and they totally get this concept of not over-exercising and doing it at the right intensity and the perfect duration. So, and for women, too, you know, we tend to be so stressed. We're multitasking all the time, and then you're adding on this stress of too long of workouts, too aggressive. And then what that also does is it suppresses growth hormone. So you probably were, you know, under a lot of stress. And then when you don't get that growth hormone release from exercise, women, we're very dependent on growth hormone to build muscle, to repair our skin cells, to build bone density. And so if we're stressed, we're not going to get growth hormone, and you're not going to get the benefits from exercise either. So, again, shortening your workout and doing it more focused on strength training, you'll get a better release of growth hormone, and you'll get better results.
Oh, that's incredible. Now, I walk my dogs. I walk them about an hour every day, and I don't push it too hard, but I push it a little bit. Is that too much, or as long as I'm not, like, dripping with sweat or anything? I just, okay.
Yeah,
so that's
I think that if you're walking, I think it's probably not going to be a problem.
Yeah, I don't run.
If you're running more than 30 to 40 minutes for a seasoned athlete, they can run 30 to 40 minutes and probably not get the same rise in stress hormones that us normal people will get.
Oh,
but if you're a normal woman or man that's just looking to build muscle and stay fit, there's no reason why you should be spending an hour a day in the gym. There's just no reason why. None.
Wow.
So I focus on 30 minutes 3 times a week of strength training, and I recommend cardio only once a week.
Really? Oh, I've got to have my husband listen to this because he is a big runner and a cyclist and weight training. I mean, he's in great shape. And yeah, that's so interesting.
You won't believe the gains. And, you know, we're really big on measuring body fat. And so we measure body fat and we measure muscle mass on every single patient that we see. And when I tell people to cut down their exercise and do focus more on strength and cardio, you won't believe. They get less fat and they get greater muscle, even though they might be the same weight.
Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. That's so incredible. You know, I'm a big fan of the show The Biggest Loser, even though I know that there's some issues there, I think, about how quickly they lose weight. And they're exercising like 8 hours. And I tend to interview a lot of the folks. They're really nice people. But at any rate, I definitely know. My husband just brought up to me yesterday. He said there was an article about how it's not healthy and they're doing too much. And it's, you know.
Well, they are losing muscle. There's no way that you could exercise and have that extreme of weight loss and not and just have loss of fat. You'll also be losing muscle. And then the thing is we all naturally tend to lose muscle as we age anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you never want to do anything that's going to compromise muscle mass because muscle burns calories. It burns more calories while you're sleeping than fat. So the more muscle you have, the better your metabolic rate in general. And when your metabolic rate's better, your energy's better, your focus is better, everything is better.
Now, speaking of the metabolic rate, you write in the book about metabolic syndrome, if you can tell us about that.
Well, this is really an epidemic. Just like stress, I'd say that metabolic syndrome is too. And metabolic syndrome is a complicated metabolic imbalance that's actually a stepping stone to type 2 diabetes, heart disease, and we now know that it's actually linked to Alzheimer's and even certain types of cancer. And it's happening simply because of our lifestyle. We're developing a resistance to insulin. And insulin is this hormone that travels around in your body and it's telling you to store energy as fat. And so when your insulin levels are high, it is just about impossible to lose weight. And the types of activity that raise insulin are things like when we eat the wrong types of carbohydrates. So white breads, white pasta, juice, pop, candy, muffins, pastries. Or if we don't eat enough protein, because protein helps to keep your blood sugar stable, or if our diet is lacking in fiber, which so many of us don't have enough fiber, or if you're under a lot of stress, or if you consume too much alcohol, all these things raise insulin. And over time, you start walking around with high insulin levels all the time. And over that leads to metabolic syndrome. And so signs of metabolic syndrome are low good cholesterol, so low HDL, high total cholesterol, high blood pressure, increased abdominal fat, so you have a waist-to-hip ratio that's skewed. You have too much weight around your waist and not enough and less around your hips.
Mm-hmm.
And then late stages, you'll get high blood sugar. And so this is so common. By the time we're 40 years old, one in three of us will have a risk factor of metabolic syndrome. And by the time we're 60, it's 3 out of 4 people has an underlying risk factor of metabolic syndrome.
And does that lead to diabetes?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Diabetes, heart disease, and so it all has to do with not exercising enough, choosing the wrong foods at the wrong times, and eating them in the wrong combinations. And just indeed eating too many of the foods that we know spike insulin.
Now, you just mentioned...
So the whole
ahead.
I was just going to say, the whole program in the hormone diet is actually based on lowering your insulin or preventing metabolic syndrome and lowering cortisol, which is long-term stress hormone, because those are the two major whammies as far as us, you know, accelerating aging and causing weight gain.
I see. You just mentioned something interesting about the combining foods. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, one of the major causes of hormonal imbalance is not being conscious of eating lean protein, so chicken, fish, turkey, bean, eggs, low glycemic carbohydrates. So a lot of diets out there promote the removal of carbohydrates because carbohydrates end up as sugar, and then sugar spikes your insulin. So that's why a lot of people restrict their carbs, but the problem is, when you restrict your carbs too much, it causes hormonal imbalance. People get really irritable and cranky when they restrict their carbs, and it's because it takes away the hormones that make you feel good and make you feel satisfied, and it triggers cravings and it raises your stress hormones. So you want to choose good carbs, which are low glycemic carbs, so fruits, certain fruits and vegetables and beans and whole grains. So you don't want to completely remove them. Your body does need some carbohydrate. And then the last component of combining is fats, so healthy fats. Again, just like people take out all their carbohydrates because they think it exacerbates weight gain, a lot of people limit their fats. But fats make us feel full. They make us feel satisfied. And it's proven, unless we have good fats coming in from the diet, our body may not burn the old fat that's stuck on our stomach and our thighs.
Wow, that's fascinating.
I know. If you look at this, you can look in studies with rats, and you can see that they don't burn fat unless they're getting in fat in their diet. And so you have to have lean protein, low glycemic carbohydrate, and healthy fat at every meal and snack. And when you do this, it will keep your energy consistent. It will keep your blood sugars consistent. It will reduce heart disease, diabetes, lowers cholesterol, and it's really the secret to aging the best that you can age. So that's actually step two of the hormone diet is okay. Hormonally balanced nutrition. But before you get there, I have people do an anti-inflammatory detox where we take out all the foods that we know could trigger inflammation or have the potential of being allergenic. Because we know, yes, whole grains are good for you, but how do you know which whole grains are best for you?
Mm-hmm.
And so we take them out for the first 2 weeks, and then I have you do a process of introduction of the grains and certain types of proteins one time. So you can notice if you get gas, bloating, headaches, fatigue, water retention, or if you ever go to bed one night and you wake up and you look in the mirror in the morning mm-hmm. and you look really puffy or you've got dark circles
on
your
eyes. Oh, my gosh. I get totally puffy in my eyes when I eat wheat, so I've stopped
there
eating
it. There
you go. It's horrible. It's
so
really crazy.
Yeah, so wheat is a problem for you. And
yes.
The key is you've got to first figure out which grains are best for you. So before you go into balancing your protein, carbs, and fats, which is absolutely essential, you have to figure out first which are the best protein, carbs, and fats for you.
Okay, so that's the first step. And then you just had talked about the second step. And there's something that I wanted to say that I thought was so great in your book that you said, you know, before you talk about the changes, you know, change things around with the three steps, there's something that's so important. And you wrote, quote, "I encourage you to focus on achieving a great health, feeling good, gaining strength, and building muscle, and not on attaining Hollywood's perception of the perfect body." Keeping this in mind, you know, I just think that's incredible, you know.
Well, it I
so
see,
important.
You know, so many people are obsessed with the number on the scale, and it is by no means your absolute indicator of health. Yes, it is important to, you know, not be, you know, morbidly obese or very overweight, but, you know, you've got to really think about, you know, not being a skinny fat person. So
yes, I knew it. I used to live with a skinny fat person, and she would
brutal.
Eat Twinkies and white bread, and she was skinny, but she was totally, like, if you touched her, she felt like a Twinkie. She was
That's
thin
right.
but smushy, you know?
Absolutely no muscle on there, and, you know, that is just, that's why, you know, all these people that really might look wonderful, but they're completely not healthy because they don't have the muscle to help, you know. What happens if a skinny fat person has to go through a stressful event like a severe illness or surgery? Your body, like, remember before we were talking about stress mm-hmm. and how your body will tap into your muscle fiber to get you through the stressful event?
Yeah.
Well, if you're a skinny fat person and you get ill or you have to go for major surgery, your body doesn't have that muscle tissue to tap into, so then it taps into your organs.
Oh, wow.
So that's another reason why you always want to maintain muscle. And I don't care how old you are. I have people that are 75, 80 years old, and I still have them doing, I'm measuring their muscle, and I'm making sure that they're staying strong and they're staying healthy.
That's so important. You know, whenever I do any show that has to do with weight loss, I always say that I think you can have thin people that are unhealthy and heavier people that are healthy. I really do. And I think this size, you know, people are so sizist. That's really a word, but it just drives me nuts because everyone, you know, wants to be a certain size. So I think it's so good that you focus on that, you know.
Yeah, well, really, and, you know, the other thing, I think the unique aspect of what the hormone diet is, I see so many people that come in and say, I've done everything and I can't lose weight. And I say, well, number one, stop focusing on the weight because that's not the be-all, end-all. We're going to look at your waist-hip ratio. We're going to look at how much muscle you have, how much fat you have, and then we'll look at your weight.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to stop thinking about, you want to start looking at why aren't you losing weight? And that's what this process does. It helps you identify all the reasons why we're overweight, and it fixes that. And so when you take away those, or when you restore the balance of all the reason why you're not losing weight, like in my case, I had a deficiency of thyroid hormone. I replaced the thyroid hormone. I lost the weight.
I see.
You know, I had insulin resistance because I have polycystic ovarian disease, which I got diagnosed about 6 years after the thyroid problem. And that went away from the exact strength training program and the nutrition program that I put in the book.
Oh, that's great. So,
and it's like, so stop thinking about focusing on the weight loss, start thinking about, I'm going to fix all the reason why I'm overweight. Is it insulin resistance? Is it stress? Is it low thyroid? Is it, are you estrogen dominant? All these types of things. So I help you identify what your imbalance is and then how to fix it.
Yeah, and I think what else is so wonderful about the book is it's not, you know, that's obviously a huge part, but another huge part is, you know, you talk about sex and, you know, things that have nothing, we're not even talking about weight loss at this point, but, you know, I love how you say, quote, when I say getting physical, I mean enjoying two basic hormone enhancing fat burning stress busting activities, sex and exercise. And so your mojo can be totally off if your hormones are off, right?
Oh, absolutely. I just, like, I put this direct quote in the book, there's two questions I ask every single patient I see. How's your energy and how's your sex drive?
Yeah.
If you've noticed a change in either one of those things, it's a definite sign that something is out of balance with your health.
Okay.
And yet the majority of us tend to ignore those symptoms for years and years and years.
Yeah, just say, oh, I've been married a long time, I'm getting old, you know.
Exactly. And it's
I'm too tired.
You know, I don't say that, okay, you're going to start the hormone diet, you're going to start having sex, you know, five times a week right away on week one. It's not about that. It's like once you get your hormones back in balance, you'll start to have an interest in sex again. And then when the more sex you have, the more hormonal benefits you get from sex.
Oh, good.
And so it actually is it's a wonderful thing that one helps to promote the other. So, you know, I talk about getting, you know, sex and sweat. That's when you start exercising, and when you start to think about sex is not until step three. So, I think after you've done the detox for the first 2 weeks and I've taught you how to sleep properly and then you've focused on nutrition for hormonal balance for 2 weeks, I don't even want you to think about exercise for the first 4 weeks of the program. So that's also, I guess you could compare that to The Biggest Loser and realize that I don't want people to rush into exercise because I think exercise is what will guarantee your long-term success. And just like I don't want people to feel pressure to rush into sex, at the same time, sex does wonderful things for your hormones and appetite control and your mood and anxiety and stress reduction. So there's a whole chapter on sex and how it's so beneficial for you. And many men in my office have said, could you please write that down for me so I can take that home to my wife? That and the sleeping in the nude, which is also important for your hormones.
Really?
They say, could you write that down for me so I can show my wife?
Oh, my gosh. That's so interesting. You know, it's funny because I was going to bring up sleep. Now, my daughter, being on the spectrum, is not the best sleeper, so I rarely get a full night's sleep. It's usually divided, and it's so tough. And there's certain times where it's not about me not having a good, you know, sleep hygiene or going to bed. I can go to bed at 9. I'm still going to be up from like 11 to 1 most nights, and then so it's divided up. Do you have any advice for somebody who, if they have children with issues and it's just there's kind of no way around it, how can they still balance their hormones with those sleep disruptions?
Absolutely. You know, that's a time when your nutrition habits during the day are essential.
Okay.
So, again, don't skip meals. Don't go longer than 3 to 4 hours without eating and balance your nutrients like I've spoken about, your protein, your carbs, your fats. That's essential. But really, when you don't have control over your sleep patterns, you really have to add in supplements to help reduce the stress hormone, because we know that being sleep deprived or having poor sleep quality, it raises cortisol. So
no wonder.
The Relora, which is one of my favorite supplements because it lowers cortisol.
I'm sorry, what was it called?
Relora, R-E-L-O-R-A, and you can get it at any health food store.
Oh, great.
And you take 500 milligrams at bedtime and about 250 milligrams in the morning, and that will lower cortisol, and it raises DHEA, which is your anti-aging, anti-stress hormone. And I use one in my office that's from Douglas Labs, and I'm sure you guys can get it anywhere in North America, and it is definitely so incredibly beneficial to help reduce the high stress hormone that's going to happen because really, you know, you're in a situation that you really can't control.
I see. Oh, that's so helpful. Because, yeah, that's what I worry about. It's like I can try to do everything I can, but there's certain things that are just out of people's control. Or if people work a swing shift or if they have to, you know, to put food on the table, they have to work odd hours. You know, sometimes it's really difficult. But then there are some people who just don't have good sleep hygiene. And you talk about that in your book. So there are things that people can do to you know, get better sleep.
Well, yeah, no, there is absolutely. And there's tricks. I mean, the thing is that when all the stuff that I suggest in the book, okay, we've talked about nutrition, we've talked about exercise, we've talked about sleep. You know, we all know we have to do these things, but what I've done is I've done the research to figure out how you do all these things to optimize hormonal balance. And when you do that, it makes, you know, optimize your aging better, it makes your losing weight easier, building muscle easier. And sleep is the whole program actually starts with you focusing on sleep, because it is absolutely impossible to get your hormones back in balance if you don't sleep properly. And most of us have no idea how to sleep in such a way that it maximizes hormonal balance and it maximizes the fat-burning potential of sleep. Mm-hmm. And so I have two sections that the only chapter I tell everyone to read is the sleep chapter. And I tell you how to create the perfect environment for sleep and then the rules of sleeping that you need to follow. So, for example, the environment would be absolute pitch black.
Yep.
You cannot have any light shining on you anywhere. Even light the size of a dime shining anywhere in your skin will reduce the production of melatonin. And melatonin is that antioxidant, immune-enhancing hormone that really helps repair and recuperate us when we sleep. And then if you don't get the release of melatonin, you don't get the release of growth hormone in your deeper stages of sleep. And again, growth hormone builds your skin cells, your muscle cells, your bone cells. So we all really need that growth hormone. And so just by sleeping with a little bit of light, even enough from your alarm clock, is going to interfere with the hormone and recuperative benefits of sleep.
Oh, that is so interesting. My daughter and I always have a big struggle because she likes us to keep, we shut her door and she likes the hall light on. And I said, it's not good. It goes under her door. But I give her, you know, there's so many battles, pick your battles, but I do give her melatonin every night. So I feel like at least hopefully that's helping, but I'm going to still try to convince her not to use the light. But she's five, so it's a little tricky.
Well, you could also use a red light bulb. Red light bulbs apparently don't have this as much of a detrimental effect. So maybe use a night light in the hall, but put a little red light bulb in it.
Oh, thank you. That's great.
And then the dosage of, you know, I would point out that probably in most children, most children that are, you know, that don't have any chronic health conditions or concerns, they would be producing their own melatonin. So it's probably, if anyone's listening that has kids that have sleep problems, I wouldn't go first to melatonin. I would go maybe more to something like magnesium or passion flower. So, because children should be producing their own levels of melatonin. And if you give it to them, sometimes it actually down-regulates their own body's ability to make melatonin.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that true for kids on the spectrum as well? Because I've been told they don't make enough, and that's
why
you're supposed to
give
it.
That's why it's different. Yeah, exactly. So, and if you're concerned, you could measure your daughter's melatonin levels. You could do a saliva test.
Oh, wow.
And
that's
see.
So interesting. Well, I have a lot of moms that listen who have children with special needs because I've done 2 full months on kids with different types of special needs. So I've built up a big audience of wonderful moms. So this is really helpful for them because I'm sure they've been told to give their child melatonin.
Right. You know? And I don't know is it 1 to 3 milligram or?
I think it's 2.
Okay, that's totally fine.
Oh, okay.
Definitely for like I mentioned, healthy children with no concerns.
Okay.
They're going to make their own melatonin. Children that have chronic health conditions or, you know, definitely that would be a concern.
Oh, okay. Now, the one thing I wanted to ask, too, is you talk about in the book, I didn't realize how, oh my gosh, I have to wrap up. This has been so wonderful.
Oh,
I could just keep speaking with you. Now, I want you to promise to come back because I have so much more I want to ask you.
Oh,
I mean,
I
would love to have you on, you know, every month or two as a, you know, featured guest if you'd like.
Oh, I would be thrilled to do that. That would be great.
Oh my gosh,
and the book's coming out in it's in the spring as well, and with Rodale, they're going to be releasing it in March, I think.
Oh, well, I'm so lucky then, that I have it right now, and I read it cover to cover, and I can't wait to, you know, I've implemented the exercises, and I can't wait to implement everything else, because it definitely, no, I have too much cortisol.
Yeah, for sure. That workout works. It's an amazing workout. You won't get bored.
No, it's wonderful. You are just fabulous, and I'm
so
glad that you can come on this show. Now, Dr. Turner, if you can tell people how to get in touch with you and about how to reach you at the clinic.
Absolutely. You can go to The Hormone Diet, so thehormonediet.com, and the book is available through there, and my office. You can also learn more about the clinic and just more about the book overall through there.
Well, terrific. Well, I'll be in touch with you to set up our next interview. I can't wait. Have a wonderful day. Everyone, have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Next week on the program, starting next month, I'm only here Thursdays. I'm not going to be here Tuesday anymore, so just Thursdays. And I'm going to have T. Colin Campbell, who wrote the China Study, which is one of the most comprehensive studies on nutrition ever. And his whole philosophy is plant-based diet. And he is amazing. And then I'm also having a wonderful writer named CJ Lyons. She used to be a pediatric physician in the emergency room, and she now is a novelist and has written wonderful books about things like that. So I want to thank everyone again. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. David, have a great Thanksgiving. Thanks for all your hard work. I'm thankful
thank
you
for you.
So,
thank you.
So very thankful for you. And my family and my show and, of course, my dogs who are sitting in the car. But they had to work out first. Okay, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.
Will Jesus have to come again to show us how to love? And will he have to die again?